Of course, we're in the book of Leviticus, and we're in chapter 25. And it's a very long chapter, but we'll go through it. I think we'll finish it today, God willing. If you don't ask too many questions, we'll finish it.
Leviticus 25. The Lord spoke to Moshe on Mount Sinai, saying, "Speak to the people of Israel and say to them, when you come into the land that I give you, the land shall keep a Shabbat to the Lord. For 6 years you shall sow your field, and for 6 years you shall prune your vineyard and gather in its fruits. But in the 7th year there shall be a Shabbat of solemn rest for the land, a Shabbat to the Lord. You shall not sow your field or prune your vineyard. You shall not reap what grows of itself in your harvest, or gather the grapes of your undressed vine. It shall be a year of solemn rest for the land. The Shabbats of the land shall provide food for you, for yourself and for your male and female slaves, and for your hired worker and the sojourner who lives with you, and for your cattle and for the wild animals that are in your land. All its yield shall be your food. You shall count 7 weeks of years, 7 times 7 years, so that the time of the 7 weeks of years shall give you 49 years. Then you shall sound the loud trumpet on the 10th day of the 7th month. On the Day of Atonement you shall sound the trumpet throughout your land, and you shall consecrate the 50th year, and proclaim liberty throughout the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee for you, when each of you shall return to his property, and each of you shall return to his clan. That 50th year shall be a jubilee for you. In it you shall neither sow nor reap what grows of itself, nor gather the grapes from the undressed vines. For it is a jubilee. You shall be holy to it. Shall be holy to you. You may eat the produce of the field. In this year of jubilee, each of you shall return to his property. And if you make a sale to your neighbor or buy from your neighbor, you shall not wrong one another. You shall pay your neighbor according to the number of years after the jubilee, and he shall sell to you according to the number of years for crops. If the years are many, you shall increase the price, and if the years are few, you shall reduce the price, for it is the number of crops that he is selling to you. You shall not wrong one another, but you shall fear your God, for I am the Lord your God. Therefore, you shall do my statutes and keep my rules and perform them, and then you will dwell in the land securely. The land will yield its fruits, and you will eat your fill and dwell in it securely. And if you say, what shall we eat in the 70th year, in the 7th year, if we may not sow or gather in our crop? I will command my blessing on you in the 6th year, so that it will produce a crop sufficient for 3 years. When you sow in the 8th year, you will be eating some of the old crop. You shall eat the old until the 9th year, when its crop arrives. The land shall not be sold in perpetuity, for the land is mine. You are strangers and sojourners with me, and in all the country you possess, you shall allow a redemption of the land. If your brother becomes poor and sells part of his property, then his nearest redeemer shall come and redeem what his brother has sold. If a man has no one to redeem it, and then himself becomes prosperous, and finds sufficient means to redeem it, let him calculate the years since he sold it, and pay back the balance to the man to whom he sold it, and then return to his property. But if he does not have sufficient means to recover it, then what he sold shall remain in the hand of the buyer until the year of Jubilee. In the Jubilee it shall be released, and he shall return to his property. If a man sells a dwelling house in a walled city, he may redeem it within a year of its sale. For a full year he shall have the right of redemption. If it is not redeemed within a full year, then the house in the walled city shall belong in perpetuity to the buyer throughout his generations. But the houses of the villages that have no wall around them shall be classified with the fields of the land. they may be redeemed, and they shall be released in the Jubilee. As for the cities of the Levites may redeem at any time the houses in the cities they possess. And if one of the Levites exercises his right of redemption, then the house that was sold in the city they possess shall be released in the Jubilee. For the houses in the cities of the Levites are their possession among the people of Israel. But the fields of pasture land belong to the cities, to their cities may not be sold, for that is their possession forever. If your brother becomes poor and cannot maintain himself with you, you shall support him, though he were a stranger and a sojourner, and he shall live with you. Take no interest from him or profit, but fear your God that your brother may live beside you. You shall not lend him your money at interest, nor give him your food for profit. I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt to give you the land of Canaan to be your God. If your brother becomes poor beside you and sells himself to you, you shall not make him serve as a slave. He shall be with you as a hired worker and as a sojourner. He shall serve with you until the year of Jubilee. Then he shall go out from you, he and his children with him, and go back to his own clan and return to the possession of his fathers. For they are my servants, whom I brought out of the land of Mitzrayim. They shall not be sold as slaves. You shall not rule over them ruthlessly, but shall fear your God. As for your male and female slaves whom you have, you may buy male and female slaves from among the nations that are around you. You may also buy from among the strangers who sojourn with you and their clans that are with you, who have been born in your land, and they may be your property. You may bequeath them to your sons after you to inherit as a possession forever. You may make slaves of them, but over your brothers, the people of Israel, you shall not rule one over another ruthlessly. If a stranger or sojourner with you becomes rich, and your brother beside him becomes poor and sells himself to the stranger sojourner with you, or to a clan member, then after he is sold, he may be redeemed. One of his brothers may redeem him, or his uncle or his cousin may redeem him, or a close relative from his clan may redeem him. Or if he grows rich, he may redeem himself. He shall calculate with his buyer from the year when he sold himself to him until the year of the Jubilee, and the price of his sale shall vary with the number of years. The time he was with his owner shall be rated as the time of a hired worker. If there are still many years left, he shall pay proportionately for his redemption some of his sale price. If there remain but a few years until the year of Jubilee, he shall calculate and pay for his redemption in proportion to his years of service. He shall treat him as a worker hired year by year. He shall not rule ruthlessly over him in your sight. And if he is not redeemed by these means, then he and his children with him shall be released in the year of Jubilee. For it is to me that the people of Israel are servants. They are my servants, whom I brought out of the land of Mitzrayim. I am the Lord your God.
A lot of stuff, right? So are there any thoughts, ideas, input? Okay, we have a question right here.
All about rules and regulations that we should keep in order to get along beautifully with one another.
But it's not real, right? We don't do that, so we didn't come close to doing that. She had a question over here. Oh, question there.
Well, how come it says that one part of here you can eat of the Shabbat, but then it says not on the Jubilee, and then It says not at all? So
two situations Taking place here. Okay, we're going to find the reason why I introduced it in the first section is to bring us into the final conclusion of the matter, which is called the 50th year or the year of they call it Jubilee. Go ahead. Next question. We'll try to address that day the best we can. No more questions? You had a question over here.
Okay, so in verse 35, it says, if thy brother be waxen poor and fall into decay with thee, Then thou shalt relieve him, yea, though he be a stranger or sojourner, he may live with thee. Take thou no usury of him or increase, but fear thy God that thy brother may live with thee. Thou shalt not give him thy money upon usury, nor lend him thy victuals for increase. I am the Lord your God. All right, well, my situation was the other way around. She was waxing poor, but she had the house. I'm just trying to relate.
Oh.
You know, okay, so I've heard other people say after the end of their time that they've cared for someone that, oh, so-and-so owed him, you know, $400,000 in money. I mean, I've heard this. And I don't look at it that way, but I just wonder, you know, I mean, we all...
Well, we're looking here, we're looking at what Devarim Elohim has to say. It's not necessary going to be in agreement with the judges of any country or the lawmakers of any country or the rulers of any country. We're not talking about how it should be. We're talking about what God said is. Now, when we don't do what God says it is, guess what we're going to pay? We're going to pay the loss. That's what happens, you know. You could wish and hope and desire that our country, for all countries on the face of the earth, would even come close to doing what it says in the 25th chapter. But not even Israel does it today in the 25th chapter. They didn't come close to it. Because secular governments are secular governments. But I don't want theology government either, because then you have to have people like me telling you what to do, what not to do, and I have to spank you, punish you. I don't want to do that either, you know. No, it's your job. 100% your job, how you do and how you live and how you walk. Okay, so we're talking now. As they go into the land, they were going to be in the land for another 40 years. So in this process of time, he said, well, he was on Mount Sinai. That's when he was teaching them. Now, Mount Sinai was in the very first year. We're still in the very first year that they are there. And a lot of things we have gone up to in the 25th chapter, and from the first chapter of Leviticus to here, he's still being taught. God is still giving him instructions and to teach them and to teach the Aaron and his sons exactly how, and explain to the Aaron's sons how, what is clean and unclean, and how do you get that is unclean to become clean, that which is unholy and that which is holy. How do you get the unholy to become holy? Well, you get rid of the unholy completely and you only participate in that which is holy, which he says you will be holy because I am holy. We went through this process before, right? You understand what I'm talking about. Here we're at this particular point now that we are trying to figure out how do we institute this in our country? You don't. Don't try. You'll never get there. How do you institute it in your life? No, that's another question, right? Well, let's begin. You go in there. By the way, how many of you have a wheat field or have a barley field? Potting plants. Okay. That's not what it's talking about. We'll talk about what it means when it says to sow and what it means to say reap. We're not talking about carrots in the backyard. Because the word is very interesting here in Hebrew, what that word means. It literally means to cut down. Well, that's what it really means. To reap means to cut down. Are you going to cut down? Doesn't say to cut down trees. There's basically, and when we're talking about this, sowing of the land, there's two main crops that are harvested. We went through the harvest of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, went through the harvest of the Feast of Seven, two different kind of what? Seeds. And so when you read into Hebrew, talk about the word sow, it's talking about sowing of a seed. Not planting of a turnip. Not planting of, you know, a tree. We already talked about what he said about the tree, right? You can finally get to eat the fruit of the tree after how many years?
Five
years. Then you can eat it, period, point blank. Anytime you want. Or when actually when it comes to ripeness or to receive, we have to wait. When you plant a new tree for the first time. It takes that long for the tree to get the nourishment from the ground and return it back to the ground, nourish the ground, return it back to the ground, nourish the ground, return it back to the ground, so on and so forth. It takes that long for that tree to become, quote, mature. That makes sense to you? You know, we talked about that before. So we're here now, and we have talking about just the very first part of this chapter, 1 through verse 6. And he says now, basically, in the seventh year, you shall be a Sabbath year of rest unto the land. Sabbath year unto Yahuwah. Remember, this is the Sabbath year unto whom? Okay, that's very important to keep in mind. Why would it, thy would God himself, the creator of heaven and earth, say, by the way, this is mine, not yours. Right? It says, my. Well, now we have to start addressing God, not us. Start addressing God, not the government. Start addressing all ourselves rather than a senator or representative. They're not God. They're not Yahuwah. They're not the creator of heaven and earth. Who are they? Okay, so we're looking at this point. We're saying, listen very carefully. There's three things here. Basically, the sowing of the barley and of the wheat and something about one of the product. Grapes. Okay, fascinating. Now, during the days of unleavened bread, we lift up what unto God?
Grapes.
What kind?
Barley.
Barley. During the days of Sukkot, we lift up something else. What do we lift up?
Wheat.
Two main crops. But where's the wine? Do we lift the wine up? Doesn't show that, does it? Huh? Huh?
Every Shabbat.
Every All right. I don't want to go through a lot of routine here, but what does the unleavened bread represent?
Purity and truth.
Keep that in mind. Okay. And during the Feast of Sevens, what kind of bread is that? It's leavened. Leavened bread. And creator of heaven says, they are holy unto me. I thought only leavened stuff was unholy. No. Because we are human beings. We are full of stuff that has to be unleavened, but in the flesh. So you understand a little bit how that works. Okay? So we're getting into that point right here. Now, it goes in here that verse 5, it says, that which grows of its own according to thy harvest, thou shalt reap it. Well, it says not reap it. I missed it, didn't I? I have to say these things so you pay attention to what's been written, if you don't mind. Don't assume I got it right. You know, look at it. Find out what it says. And it says, you will also do not do something else. You're not even going to scatter the seeds. No seed casting in the seventh year. So by happenstance, it will grow of it by itself. Now we say, well, what's wrong with that? Isn't the seed supposed to represent the word of God? Yeah. Oh, so I'm spreading service of God all over the place, even when he says don't do it. Why don't we do it? Why do we do it? Because we, when the prayer is, we work for the Lord, right? No, why don't you work with the Lord? He has a reason for not doing it. And we have to figure out exactly what is his purpose of not sowing in the seventh year and not reaping in the seventh year and not cutting off the grape in the seventh year. But a normal seven-year cycle, you can't actually do what? You can't eat that which comes up by itself. And towards later on in the chapter, except during a certain period of time. For one full year, you do not. And that's the 50th year. Now what's the difference between the 50th year, what we call in English, Jubilee, compared to the 7th year on a regular cycle, every 7 years, every 7 years, every 7 years? What's the difference between the two? Aren't they the same? No, they're not the same. Yes.
Well, in the Jubilee, people get their stuff back.
More than that, a whole lot of stuff turns course. We're talking a normal 7-year period, which is that we are not to sow, nor we are to harvest, nor are we to pick the grapes. But if it comes up by itself, you could do so. But in the 50th year? Nope. Nope. So we think about the Jubilee year, and a lot of people, my personal opinion, Richard Age's personal opinion, has nothing to do with anything else, that a lot of people try to figure out what is the Jubilee year. And try to calculate this out in history. Okay, this was, the Jubilee was in 67, or maybe it was 78, maybe it was 40. And they try to calculate it all the way through, so no, we're at the time then because the Jubilee is coming. Is that what the issue's all about? Oh. What is the issue of the quote Jubilee year about? It's more than just returning back to the owner. There's a lot of things that take place. Okay. It has to do also with the time what's called redemption. Redemption. That's the time you get to redeem. You get to buy it back. Any time between in the time between those 50 years, you get to buy it back. Under certain conditions, of course. If you can't, in the 50th year, guess what? You get it anyway. You get it back anyway. So God returns back to the owner that which is he was given to him by God. And when he said, I'm entering into the promised land, to go in the land of the promised land, what they call promised land, in the land of Canaan, this is what you are going to do. And he has a pattern now. He didn't say, this is what the Russians are going to do. They have to do it too. This is what the Chinese have to do. They have to do it too. This is what the Greeks have to do because they have to do it too. No, just whom? The house, the all of Israel. For a reason. And it's for a reason that we need to look at and say, this is a picture. God is showing us something by what is written, what it's all about. And we can be puzzled trying to institute it into our life. Why don't we just look and see what God has to say about how it is. Not how it's going to be, but how it is with Him. If we neglect, if Israel, the nation of Israel today, if they neglect, what does God say? For 7 years I'll put you in famine. You know, there was another point in history where a country and even the land were actually affected where Jacob was for 7 years. I wonder if he claimed it. But they were even before that. There was these people came after all that kind of stuff. So I have to ask yourself some questions. What is the purpose of all of this? Can you have any questions? He says, now you shall... You know, the land that comes up by itself, by the way, you get to eat of it, and your cattle get to eat of it too. I mean, the animals you have, the cattle, the goat, the sheep, or whatever else, they get to go in there that you have, your possession stuff. They get to also eat that which comes up by itself. How many times have you seen a goat gather in as much grain as he possibly can? He gathers it in here as far as it goes. After he's done, okay, no more gathering. We also read before where when it comes out for the poor people to come through, we had talked about the Feast of Seven, that is for the poor. But the poor cannot bring in a bucket. What do they bring in? A handful for that day and that day only. They have to go back again the next day. They can't stockpile. Stockpile and stockpile. Now, in this seventh year, where it seemed like there's no purpose to it whatsoever, other than that God said so, what do you think of any other purpose why he has this other than he said so, and therefore we must obey? God gives us reasons why. He calls them statutes. He calls them ordinance. For what reason? Because he likes to give us statutes, give us ordinance, so we fail and we lose. That he doesn't like us. He makes sure that we always fail. Is that his object? Okay.
if you can't sow, you have to gather, but you also have to really trust and depend on God. And
that's the word, trust. You have to trust that God's going to provide more in the sixth year. This is not trusting your ability to grow more. It's not trusting your ability to be better with the harvesting and be better with the reaping so you have twice as much and God's not in the picture. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's not a matter of faith. It's a matter of trust. Okay, so we have this process, and the people who are poor, well, it also said, we see here, they always take care of the poor no matter what, but they are to also trust. No matter how poor you are, they have to trust that God's going to provide you daily, 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 daily. The food you need and your family needs for the next seventh year. It is a matter of, do you trust God or do you not trust God? If you try to say, well, I'm going to make sure that I'm taken care of and my family's taken care of, and the sixth year, I'm going to, what's that word he used? It's called increase, and had to do with the profit. Make sure I have enough in my stockpile. Do you remember what Yahshua said? The man who had so much grain, and he wanted to do something more. He was taking care of himself and his family and all that. And he's like, I had to build me another silo to put more in there. He was doing, quote, preserving and making sure he had enough for his, sixth year. So he had enough for his seventh year. And what happened?
He died.
You're dead. Pretty serious, don't you think? So, we look at this thing, we say, okay, is this really just something that God just likes to mumble? Or is he actually telling us, even in the unusual circumstances that doesn't seem to make sense to us as human beings, because we are the flesh, we need to eat, which comes up out of the ground, don't we? If we can't just, you can't eat a cow unless something comes up from the ground for the cow to eat. So you depend upon what comes up out of the ground. Right? And so, in the beginning, he created the heavens and the earth. And that earth he created it for us. We also came up out of the earth, didn't we? And the earth is going to say, I want you back. And the earth gets it back. The earth will get you back. It's just a matter of time. So it has to do with an awful lot. Now, we're talking about grain, we're talking about wheat, and we're talking about why would he restrain also don't harvest or cut the grape? We're supposed to. In the seventh year, maybe if it's out there on your own, you could take what comes up. How often do you take? As much as you can before it spoils? No, on that day. You're in the same boat with the poor person. That which comes up out of the ground on its own, you are going to be just like the person who doesn't have a land, who doesn't have a crop, who doesn't have a grapevine. You're going to be just like them. You're going to pick up just what you need for that day. No more. Right? What will that do to human beings? Sorry, what?
Humble.
Humble. Sorry, what?
Frustrated.
Well, yeah, if they go contrary and don't like it, then they're frustrated.
But if you teach you to trust and believe God, what he says is true.
In the Jubilee, wait a minute. In the Jubilee year, talks about this. When you see somebody who has nothing, what are you supposed to do? Take care of them. And if you don't know what that means in the seventh year, guess what? Though you have abundance in the sixth year, you got a lot of your family. Are you going to gobble it all up in 1 year, 1 month, one time? No, it's so abundant that it goes on in the ninth year, right? It's a long time. So it's trusting God that he'll provide, but he wants us to do something like he does. Yes.
Can I make a comment rather than ask a question? When we came into this Jubilee year, I asked the Lord, okay, so I'm not farming, and I live outside of Israel. How do I honor the Jubilee? And he said, don't sow plans. Now, I
nor reap, nor harvest, nor cut. Those
plans,
three objects.
Plans. He told me not to sow plans.
And so we're looking here. What do we see? Now, I'm not talking about Jubilee year. We're just talking about the first, we're talking about the first seventh year. Now, Jubilee comes in after seven periods of those 7 years. And we come into 49 years of Sabbath. And then the 80th year, guess what? Excuse me. The 50th year, what happens? Well, you're not supposed to harvest anything or reap anything. Of by itself, you can. Excuse me, in the very last of the 7 year cycle. But on the 50th day, no. Unlike before, you can sow and you can plant. You can pick, take care of your garden, take care of it. No, you don't take care of it for one more year. Why so? Have you ever thought about that? Why so?
Are you talking the 50th day or the 50th year?
50th, in the 50th year. We're in Jubilee year now. We're talking about that in the 8th verse. He says, there'll be 7 Sabbaths and 7 times, 7 years, a space of 7 Sabbaths. It shall be unto you for 49 years. And then you shall be below the sound. We're talking about this Jubilee in just a minute. Jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the 7th month, which is what? Yom Kippurim. I want to give you a little bit of information I was thought when I studied this stuff, and I said, this is very fascinating. Jubilee is really an odd word, but it does come from the verb of it, not the noun. Yovel is the word. It's a noun phrase. And it literally means a ram's horn. Now, you'll find it, when you translate that, find out how many places that word in Hebrew is used. It's not used very often. Very seldom does it pop up. We always think a ram horn is the same thing as a shofar. Don't we? No, shofar can be a ram's horn, but not all shofars are ram's horn. You can blow it from any horn. Shofar does not mean ram's horn. Here, you'll believe means ram's horn. And it's found not very common. And it must be blown in the 50th year. This is when the ram's horn is to be blown in the 50th year. Why is it not blown any other time? Interesting, don't you? Never thought about that, right? And you will proclaim a year of liberty, of freedom, throughout all the land and all the inhabitants thereof. That includes both the poor and the stranger and your fellow. Yes?
It's interesting. Ram made me think of the sacrifice of Isaac and the substitute, and that maybe...
I call it the substitute. Sacrifice. The ram's horn is a substitute. But the ram itself is, but not the goat. Now, remember, in order to have what's called a sin offering for sins, it's not a ram's, it's a goat. Here, when the word ram is used in certain locations, it's very fascinating. Why is it there and not used over here and here and here? Because a ram has another picture. Let me ask you a question. What's the nature of a ram? Huh?
He pushes through.
That's why it's called a ram. You're rams, people. You're ram. Lowers the head, bucks.
Yes.
That's it. You know, it's not a little tiny thing just being born. It's a grown sheep, mountain sheep, and it will do damage. It's forceful. It's powerful. And so we start thinking about the time with substitution. What was replaced for Isaac's sake? something that has power and strength and might. All right. Messiah has a lot of different pictures. He's called sheep. He's also called the goat. He's also called the ram. He's also called the lion. I don't know what else he's called. But all those are not what he is, but what his strength, his ability, and his function, actually his function of what he does. And what his function is still the same today. Hasn't changed. Because how many people come in brand new accepting Passover, knowing that it was a lamb? Even Revelation still talks about the lamb. Remember the at the throne? The scroll was handed to the lamb. To the sheep, the little lamb. Not to a ram, not to a lion, not even to a king yet. Still handed to a lamb. His function is still functioning as a lamb. What's he doing? Drawing people. When God the Father draws someone unto his Son, that's who that person's going to see. They're not going to see a king. They're not going to see a lion. They're not going to see a ram. They're going to see a sheep. That's what God wants them to see of the first year. Set aside for a purpose and for a reason. And so when we even think about taking the Passover, we should remember that people who are coming into knowledge, that God is bringing them into the knowledge. You're not. God is the one who provides information for everybody. We're not. We just kind of live by it. We just do it and see what happens. And we stumble, we fall, we crash, we get back up again. We stumble, we fall, we crash, we get back up again. We keep going, we keep going, we keep going, we keep going. Now, in this one, now he talks about this ram's horn. And I find it very fascinating because in the book of Joshua is where this quote, word jubilee shows up, but not translated that way. And it's translated when the seven priests shall bear before the ark seven trumpets of jubilee. Ram's horn. Just seven. Not 345,000, not 666 billion, just seven. Now, I find that fascinating. What does seven mean? Completion. It is finished. It is over with. It is done. In the seventh year, God rested. Seventh day, God rested because it was. Something was finished, was done. Same thing in this one on the seventh trumpets. The seventh, those represent something that what happened when they blew it on the seventh, the last day, seventh day. It ended. It was finished. It was done. Jubilee was over with. And Jericho was over with. Basically, the word in literalist means, in Hebrew, it's the word, a verb meaning, to flow with a loud blast. So when the ram's horn is blown, it's not blown with some kind of rhythm. It's blown with one long, enduring blast. There's no wavering in it whatsoever. One long, continuous blast. Now, I don't know how long they had to blow it. I mean, hours-wise, I don't know. Doesn't tell you that. But it's kind of funny, and we look at it, knowing that, boy, that's an interesting place for it to be spoken of in the book of Joshua, when they destroyed.
Joshua what?
Second chapter? I think it's second chapter. I'm done. Sixth chapter. Sixth chapter. So we're looking at this thing of what's called jubilee. And in the verb is jubilee. That's where you get the word jubilee, because they take the verb form of it and made it into a noun for English purposes. So it's not that far off in its real sound. Okay. Chapter, go back to Leviticus 25 there. And he said, now in that year you will not sow, verse 11, that word means sow, you will not scatter seed. Literal translation. You will not scatter seed. Alright? And neither will you reap. That reap means, comes from the word, you will not cut it short. What that means is that when you are having a harvest that's coming up, whether it's wheat or barley, what do? You cut it short. You cut it. That's what it means by cutting short. You just take, what do you cut? The whole thing? Just, bam, where the grain's at. You leave the shaft where it's at. Don't need it. All right, that's kind of interesting when you kind of take a look at how is the. I know we use big, huge, giant machines these days. No one walks out there in the field and does any of that stuff. I understand that. But I'm not talking about how it's done now. I'm talking about how he said for it to be done when they enter into the promised land, which they didn't enter in for another 40 years. Nor will you gather it. The word gather, of course, is not really hard to figure out. I mean, has two different meanings, word to gather. You gather by restraining. God says, by the way, I'm going to restrain you from gathering. And what do you want? The grape. Don't get it. Don't gather it. On a normal 7-year cycle, you can cut it if it comes up by itself, but not in the 50th year. Why? Is it different? Yeah. Why is it different? What's the purpose thereof? Why 50 years? Does anybody have any idea? No? He said in verse 12, it will be holy unto you. Now, what is holy?
Obeying the Torah.
I'm sorry, what?
When you do the Torah.
When you do what he has said to do. That's a very important word, because I talked to you before about what is holy, what is unholy. I also talked to you about what is clean, what is unclean. First thing the priest had to do was teach them what was clean and what was unclean and how to get what was unclean to become clean. Now he comes around the latter part of this section. I talk about what is holy, what is unholy. You can't make that which is unholy, holy. And he says, by the way, if you commit adultery, is that holy or unholy? So, when you don't commit adultery, is it holy or unholy?
Holy.
It's holy. Holiness is what you do, not what it is. Do you understand what I'm saying? And when he said to you to be holy, because I am holy, how does that relate to us? Well, we have sharp thing. Okay, God, what are you doing? We understand what he's doing. He tells us in extreme detail. Leviticus is very, very minute in its detail about everything under the sun that I could think of that's ever been written. And so he says, to be holy. Now, what do you do? Now, it says, verse 12, it is a time of jubilee. It shall be holy to you. You shall eat the increase thereof out of the field. No mention of grapes. Did you notice this? No mention of grapes.
So you can pick somebody else's field?
That which what? That's what it says. That's what it says.
Out of the field.
What comes there? So you can't do that, but don't reap it and don't harvest it. He says, in the field. The vineyard comes a little later. All right? So what we're doing, we're reading what God has said. We're trying to figure out, okay, what does it mean? How does it apply to me? What's it all about? I mean, after all, we're in the city of Santa Rosa. Yeah, the grape fields all over the place. But what do we do? Do we try to do our very best not to go out and harvest or reap or sow in our field? Must my backyard. You don't want to grow anything in there. Let the grass grow and let the moles take what they want to take and let the deer come in to eat what they want to eat, because you can't grow anything there. So what do? Well, I live in a city. And that's why he talks about living in a city. And also talked about when you're in the field, you're going on the field. Oh, now something's different in that situation. I'll go there as we keep going. Sorry, what? my dear, you can do anything you want to do. I'm not going to tell you what you should or should not do. I don't tell people how to sleep, how to eat, how to walk, how to run. I don't tell them how to work. I don't tell them nothing. I'm really a guy who says I stay out of people's business. Because I get in trouble and I butt my nose into their business. You know, don't do it. So you can do what you want to do. I'm not going to say one thing or the other. So as we keep going on this Jubilee year, okay, that is to bring back, return things back to his possession. By the way, the Hebrew word for possession in this location also does not just restrict it to land, because you can actually take someone's possessions of value and take it into your own land or your own home. But when the Jubilee year is finished, you have to give it back. Because we talk about when he is poor, he needs money, he needs help. What are you supposed to do? Well, you're not supposed to. Now, you say, why take it at all? The Word of God doesn't say you have to take it. But if you do, it's not yours. It doesn't belong to you. I don't care how valuable it is. I don't care how much money you bought it with. I don't care if it's $1 million you paid for it. He gets it back at the end of the Jubilee year, and you're out $1 million. Right? That's what it says. I guess you might say that people cannot take advantage of you people. That was his plan. That actually is the word of Devarim Elohim. Now, we as individuals, we can give money or loan money to somebody if we want and require something of what we call collateral in our modern language. Maybe diamond ring or, something, gold coins or whatever they have, person happens to have. You may say, okay, I'm taking these possessions to make sure I get my money back. 50 years later, you may be dead. Maybe your ancestors have to give it back, but they have to give it back. It's all over. They don't keep it. So it's not only just land, but it's also any possession that person has. And when it's time to return it, you are to not increase its value. But it's inflation. Don't not increase the value. If you have taken something from somebody, let's say it's a diamond ring or whatever, and it, because diamonds increase, after, 5, 7, 8, 9, maybe 10 years, that diamond's increased in value. You cannot increase it to that value. You have to adjust for it. There's an adjustment taking place. Very small ones, by the way. But if you, all the way to the time of the 50th year, and the dime that you maybe paid $1,000 for is now $10,000 or $20,000 or $500,000, guess what? He gets it back. What is God saying? Make everybody equal? Even playing field, we hear that word. What do we hear? I'm sorry, what?
I think that's a good idea, how we plan that.
But that's really, it's a good idea, except people don't think it's a good idea. Right? I mean, the normal person would say, look, I had to hire these guys to guard this thing. It cost me thousands and thousands of dollars to guard it. I had to put it in the bank. It cost me an awful lot of money to store it in the bank. I don't get that money back, though. Because that's not how God works. It actually answers the question at the end of the chapter. Remember? The phrase at the end of the chapter. But let's go on. Verse 18, he says, you shall do, and the Apostle Paul said, we got to establish, put into practice, to do the statutes and to keep or preserve, put into action, my judgments. Now here are statutes and here are judgments. Which one do we get to choose? Both. Because you can't have judgments without a statute. There has to have a judgment based upon something that has already been said by God to do. He says, to do my statutes. And of course, if you don't, there's judgment. Yes.
After all, everything's said and done, isn't that how it's going to be in his kingdom? Where everything's fair and everybody's equal on that?
Equal? Okay. This does not increase the poor man at all. He does not increase when he has to do this. It's given back to him, but he does not grow in increase. The man who has a lot of wealth or money, he can still grow and increase on other things, but he can't grow and increase for the things this poor man needed. When it's given back to the poor man is not growing. He just got back what was his. That's it. Sorry, what? Well, tell you what. Why don't we just wait and see?
I don't know if there's going to be a point system, Bill, but some will be greater in the kingdom, some will be least in the kingdom. I know that.
Always has been that way. You know, it says there in the prophets, I think it's in Isaiah, excuse me if I don't remember it, that it says, I am the potter, right? You are the clay. If I want to make you into a mold to hold my garbage every single week, I'm going to make you in a mold and make you hold my garbage every single week. If I want to make you a beautiful, gorgeous thing, a praise and I give God honor, I'll put it on the top shelf. That's my business, not yours. Right? We don't know, so the answer to your question, we don't know which one of us is the clay that holds the garbage or which one of us is the clay that becomes honored. We don't know that, do we? We may want to be there, however, we're down there to hold the garbage, to dump it, down there to hold the garbage, to dump it. Interesting thing, by the way, when you go to Jerusalem, there's one basic entryway to get into the walled city, and it's through called the Dung Gate. Literally, and it's kind of a funny thing, but that's where all the waste was doing. It comes out, and down it goes into a valley. And anyway, we won't go there. It's kind of funny. That's the way you get in, is go through the dung pile. So maybe that should answer for some of us if we walk through the valley of the gate of dung. That's what we're there for. And if they say, according to what they say, we're going to eat in the seventh year, well, what are you going to eat in the seventh year? That which comes up when? I will. Now, this is another statement. This is not what we will do. It's not what we do. He's saying how what we shall eat. And he says the answer is this. I will increase in the sixth year. Now, once again, the statement of trust. And human beings are always tested. Do you know that God tests you out? If he doesn't test you out, then no reason for him to ever give you a test. But every time we go in scripture and he finds out, I tested you out to find out whether or not you would obey or hear my commandments or not. Whole house of Israel. Right? Whole house of Israel. I got to find out whether you obey or not. It looks like you're not. Therefore, I bring your kids in instead. Not that the kids will obey, just the kids. That was the promise from God, you could bring your kids in. Then the kids had a hard time obeying by themselves in what was written here in Leviticus. So he goes on here, what we eat is I will increase it. The seventh year, and it should be bring forth fruit for 3 years. That's a long time. The amount is three times as great. And that increase is not by any fantastic cultural work you do, any great planting wisdom you came up with, any smart PhD agricultural degree you got comes from only God and God only. There has been, in the past, in America, with small farmers, there was a series, some small farmers actually took this into reality. And they actually did not sow or reap or harvest in the seventh year. And guess what happened? They all died? No. They had plenty for the next 3 years. Though they could re-sow, re-reap, and re-harvest in the next year, next 2 years, next 3 years, they could do that. Well, it's very fascinating that the threefold, three. Very fascinating number, right? Yes.
I heard a radio program a few years ago, and they were talking to some guy who'd grown up on the farm and then years later came back, bought the family farm back, and he was doing the biblical cycle, and he said, and not using for the junk, and that they had produce way beyond what the commercial.
Actually, it's quite common. My own father was a pinto bean grower, and time to rest, he rested it. That's it, no more. I'm not plant anything. I'm let it do its job, and they had plenty. They had a lot of chickens to eat, had a lot of eggs. He had beef, he had all that kind of stuff, plus what was left over from the harvesting of beans. You know, beans, you know, you can keep for quite a while, sometimes for decades. So, yeah, but they didn't do it now, because now it's all over money, 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 or what the Word of God says, increase. You do it for profit. You do it for increase, to bring more wealth upon yourself, to increase on yourself. This way you can keep from becoming, let's say, the man who built the other Shiloh and died the next day. You can prevent that from happening by responding and what has taken place. But in America now, it's no longer anywhere near. And of course, talk about selling of land and selling possession. We went through that already. Went through a bit of it, and that all to be restored back again in that 50th year. And you're supposed to adjust its value between one point to another point, between those. Don't increase the value and don't decrease the value. Keep the value as it is. Now, one last section I want to go into, and it is in the very last section of the chapter. And that starts in 35. That was a question that came up today. 35. If thy brother be waxed poor, now he's broke. Circumstances either beyond his control, or he did something that maybe was stupid, or there was a drought, or something happened to his land and now he has nothing. He is in the sense of need. A needy person. Of course, he said, now you will establish a welfare system. Is that what it says? You shall, that, I didn't say that. You will relieve him. This is not just someone who's always poor. This is someone who became poor because certain things transpired. It doesn't explain what it is. It doesn't matter what it is. And if it mattered what it is, God would have written it down to let us know. But since God didn't have written down for us to let it know, it's a dead issue. We don't have to know the reason why. We don't have to have an excuse here. We don't have, well, you know, the reason why you're poor, because you did this, you did that, you did this, you want my help. God doesn't, there's nothing in there. How many times has God helped you and you were worthless? Did he say, well, I won't help you because you did this, you did this, you did this? No, he says, oh, I'll help you. Why? Because you're mine. You're mine. Let's go on. And also, it says, follow the decay, losing everything, then you shall revile him, bring him back to happiness, bring him back to the state, though he be a stranger or a sojourner. So it doesn't make any difference whether the person is a member of the house of Israel the nation of Israel, even a stranger who was in your land and something has happened and he became poor. Or someone who's just a sojourner, one's going to be there for a few years, do his business, and go on back into his country or travel someplace else. Something devastated him, and he lost everything. What are you supposed to do? Say, Sarah, bye-bye. Sarah, go away. No, you're supposed to help him as well. You know why? Yes.
Beginning of that there says thy brother. So then now is this looked upon like Jesus said, you know, you're walking down the street and then there is the guy laying in the sidewalk and he's kind of like your brother in humanity, you know. Or is it your brother like your blood brother, you know?
Family? This one here has to do with the house of Israel. We're talking about the house of Israel. Keep this in mind. We're going back to Leviticus. We're talking about the house of Israel and what the people of the house of Israel are supposed to run their country. And they have not run their country yet because they're not there yet. Okay? And yes, and he said, sojourners are coming to your land. How are you supposed to treat them? Like dirt? Like crap? No. Like they're one of your own.
So it's a countryman.
Yeah, I know, but in Hebrew, it was talking about someone who's not a member of the house of Israel. Or someone who is not a member of the house of Israel, but he's a businessman coming into your land, and he's going to do business with you. Almost every time they talk about sojourn, it means someone's going to come and do business. Abraham was called a sojourn, right? When he went into the promised land, when he went into the land of Canaan, what did he do? He went into business. He went into business. Became one of the most wealthiest men around. Yeah. All right? So he was a sojourner. And in a sense, guess what? Word of God says we are sojourners on this earth. So we don't need to accumulate anything. We're only here for a temporary period of time. Until we're dead. Now, this part is very fascinating. I'm going to go through this. Leviticus 25, verse 30. Now it's a very interesting thing because Jeff read this. And I'm going to go with Deuteronomy. Talk about this charge of interest, or what's called usury. And also, you will not do it for profit or for increase. When someone is in poor, and this abject poverty, whether it's a stranger, a sojourner, or one of your own, guess what? He needs money. Give it. Relieve him. Give him what he needs. As you are able to, according to Apostle Paul. If it's able, you can do it, then do it. We're not saying if I don't have someone's abject poverty and they need $300,000 in order to get back on the feet again. I'm sorry. It ain't gonna come for me because I don't have that money. he's talking about when you have it, then do it. Okay. It's not really that hard to figure out, technically speaking. And you shall not give him your money upon usury, okay? And go to Deuteronomy, the 23rd chapter. Now that's repeated. The word usury is not used very often in the Bible in the sense for interest. The verb is used a lot, but not the noun that's used for what we call interest or for increase. For increase. Charging them extra when you loan them money. Charge them anything. You will not increase it. So, Deuteronomy chapter 23. Deuteronomy chapter 23, verse 19. Here Moses is talking. He says, thou shalt not lend, or in a sense, loan upon, and different words spelled the same way, pronounced different. And it means in Hebrew, you shall not lend to bite to thy brother. You will not charge him interest either. And it continues on of money, usury of the victims, the increase, usury of any thing that is lent upon bite. What is that? I mean, that's a literal verb form of bite. What's translated into a noun has to do with the word we call usury or charging interest. What do you think bite means?
To hurt them.
Yes.
It's related to the bite of a viper. The venom infects the entire body.
Okay, how do you bite upon an interest? Verse 20, unto a stranger thou may lend bite, but unto thy brother thou shalt not lend bite. I'm using the verb sense here of to bite. Now all of a sudden, a stranger, you can bite, but of your own, don't bite, nor charge interest. Now that doesn't seem fair, right? I've heard an awful lot of commentaries about this, and since the two words are mixed together in Deuteronomy, they're saying don't bite on top of the interest. Don't add interest that the person and charge interest upon the interest. Don't bite it again. Don't bite it. Just charge the stranger the interest. But don't bite it for your people. You bite them, fine, but don't bite your people. Don't even charge them interest. It's kind of an interesting way of looking at it. Found that's very fascinating. When I tried, it's a really interesting word, why it says bite, and it turns around and means interest in the noun form. So it's taking something that is not yours, and you take it anyway, because it's called increase. Called an increase? Interesting. Ha! Of course, know about a brother who is, he's not to treat your brother in chapter, verse 39 to verse 43. You're not to treat your brother as though he is a bond servant or a maid servant. You don't treat your fellow human being, your fellow citizen, put it that way, fellow Israelite, as though they are property. Now he talks about also, he will not rule over them. Well, rule is a hard word, right? You will not dominate them. You will not dominate them. You are bought their services. By the way, biblically speaking, when a man, quote, sells himself to be a service to somebody else, that includes his entire family. His wife and his sons and his daughters. Include them all. Because he has no place else to live. If he just comes in and works for this guy for, a quote, 7 years, in a quote, right? What happens to his wife and his children for 7 years? He's not living with them. He's living with this guy. Could be clear across the other side of the country. No, he brings them with him. We know what the Torah says. If he brings his own family in, he goes out with them. Okay? And he goes down, it's very interesting here about Jubilee. And by the way, you release him in the Jubilee year, even if it's a short period of time. See, Jubilee's coming in 5.5 days. Do I, you need my help? Yeah, okay. I'll let you go. Okay, 5.5 days, you're finished. Not to treat them, your fellow Israelite, not to treat your fellow Israelite like a loser. Put that in our English language today. Maybe we understand that. Don't treat them like they are a bunch of nobodies. They need your help. Do it. Period. Point blank. Now, what does that God do to us? Don't raise your hand. How many times have you been losers in your life and God's still there? I'm using that word loose in offense, but you understand what I'm saying. Now we have this song we sing, and it says, Yeshua is the Jubilee. I heard that song before, right? And in a sense, he is the one that releases everything. So the Jubilee has to do direct association with what does Yeshua do? He returns things back. to where they once were. All right, where were you before he returned you back to the owner thereof?
To God. To go back to God, huh? If we were his, we were sold.
That's what it says here, right?
That's right.
Very last part of this whole thing. Oh, so it's verse 55. Verse 55. But unto me, the children of Israel are servants. They are my servants, whom I brought forth from the land of Egypt. I am Yahuwah, your Elohim. So he says, that's the last verse, verse 55. And so he says now, how did he become a Jubilee? We returning back to the one who owns us. Everything goes back what we would call, for a little relation, a book of, I think Acts uses it, the restoration of all things. What about Adam? Returning back, that's what belongs to the creator of heaven and earth. What about Eve? Returning back, that belongs to the creator from the beginning. What about Cain? Returning back, that what belongs to the creator. What about Abel? Returning back that which belongs to Abel. Belongs to God. So when you think about the Jubilee year, okay, it's every 50 years. We know, why 50? Why wasn't it 30? Why isn't it 40? You know, why isn't it 10? Why isn't it 7? Why is it 50? Is there another 50 involved in something in the Torah? Called the Feast of Seven. And so we come there and he says, you will count 50 days. What happened the 50th day? What are you supposed to do on the 50th day? We talked about the first days of unleavened bread, right? And we lift up just the unleavened bread. The wheat. Not the bread, but the grain. The shaft. We lift that up. On the day of sevens, what do we lift up? Two loaves of bread. Returning back to the creator of heaven and earth. 50. 50th, return back to God. All the house of Israel returns back to God in the Jubilee year. Even the stranger gets to be returned back to the creator of heaven and earth. And Israel is supposed to show that picture over and over and over again. You know, 50 years is a long time, doesn't it? Some of you haven't even reached your 50th year. No, I know it's all psychological to an awful lot of people, but I'm not talking about psychological. I'm talking about what that 50 represents is this complete giving back to God that what belongs to Him, and the first things given back to God are and is the house of Israel. Both loaves. Both the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom are given back to God. Now the world will come back, including the stranger, the sojourner, who dwells amongst you, or amongst the house of Israel.